This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided with the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help, seek out a qualified medical services provider or other healthcare professional. Welcome to the Live Your Yoga Podcast, a podcast dedicated to discovering and sharing all the ways in which yoga can be lived off the mat. Real stories by real people, just like you.
Welcome to the Live Your Yoga Podcast. Today, my guest is Gillian McMichael. She is a master transformational coach, meditation teacher, energy healer, who has supported thousands of clients to overcome their barriers to success and journey back home to their true selves. As a coach, educator, mentor, and supervisor for over 20 years, she embodies a holistic, whole person approach and has become one of the leading voices in transformational coaching and development. Gillian is also a podcast host and keynote speaker, delivering global transformational retreats and workshops. Gillian is the founder of Full Circle Global and author of Coming Home, A Guide to Being Your True Self, in which Gillian aims to help readers break free of self-limiting beliefs, the expectation of others, rediscover their passions, and pursue becoming the person they really want to be. A combination of her own story and practical exercises for readers to try, Coming Home tells the story of how one ordinary woman completely turned her life around and how others can do the same. We are delighted to welcome Gillian to the Live Your Yoga Podcast to share some of her story and the wisdom gained through her years of experience in her work and through her own transformational journey. So welcome, Gillian.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
And maybe we could just get started with you perhaps sharing with our listeners a little of your journey that led you to become a transformational coach, a meditation teacher, an energy healer, and how your personal experiences kind of opened up that opportunity to support other clients in overcoming their own challenges.
Yeah, sure. No problem. So I've been coaching coming up for October this year, 20 years. And before that, I was in a human resources and learning and development job. I knew that I wasn't 100% fulfilled in my role. I knew there was something else. And I was really at a bit of a crossroads really around my career. But I knew I loved helping people and training people and wanting to work with people on a one-on-one basis. And I saw a tiniest little advert in the newspaper when we used to advertise jobs in the newspaper. It's a long time ago now. And it said, train to be a life coach. I was like, whoa, what's this all about? So this is kind of like my calling, I think. So I looked into it. I then signed up for the course. I did the training. That was around 2003. And then I set up my own practice in 2004. And, you know, I started off very small. So I was, I was a coach that supported people on a life coach basis, really. Now, in the UK at the time, I don't know what it was like anywhere else in the world, but, you know, it was a new industry. So there was a lot of education to do, a lot of talking to people and trying to tell people that it's not just hugging trees, as a couple of people suggested it might have been, you know, but I knew from early on that as well as the one-to-one coaching, I wanted to be a coach educator as well. And I suppose that kind of then set me off into really looking around, well, how I could use my training expertise or training experience that I had into then perhaps training other people to become coaches as well. So that was my core business as well as one-to-one coaching. And then, a bit of a long story, but I'll kind of try to make it short. But in 2008, we were going through a bit of a recession here in the UK. I think it was a global recession, but we were really struggling in the UK. And clients stopped paying and people stopped signing up for courses. And it was a really tricky time. And alongside that, I was going through, my husband was separating. My ex-husband was separating. And so that brought quite a lot of trauma and a lot of challenge into the dynamic of the business and the home life. And I had my son was only a few years old at the time. And that went on for a while. Anyway, in 2009, we decided to formally separate. And alongside that came this really tsunami of the well, you know, my ex-husband wanting to take me to the cleaners and back was his words. And then, you know, the recession hitting as well. And so through that difficult time, and it lasted around a 12, well, went on for many years, but that 12 months of that, I would say the tipping point for me, I basically lost everything. So I lost my marriage. I lost my home. We sold it. He took all the money from that. You know, my car got drove away because it's part of the business. My business went into liquidation. And so there was me and my son, who was just about 6 and a half at the time, with a few suitcases, and we just had to start again. And so that's when I suppose I then fell into self-care and really deepening my practice around my own self-care, because I think at the time, to be fair, I was very lost and I was very hurt, and I was carrying a lot of shame and embarrassment around the loss of everything and being a real significant failure in most probably all aspects of my life, apart from being a mum. But everything else had seemed to just crumble around me. So it was at that point when I lay in the middle of the night, after my tears and, you know, the panic of what I was going to do and how I was going to rebuild, and that I thought I need to do something different. And so I started to look into meditation. I started to look into, I received some Reiki healing, and that started to change the way that I perceived myself and my situation and my, you know, scenario that I was dealing with. And it really helped me, I suppose that was my start of my healing journey, I would say, to kind of where I am now.
And it's interesting the kind of the path of that, because I hear that often with people. They kind of come to a crescendo or a crossroads in their life, and it forces them to make changes, mm-hmm. and it forces them to find ways to self-soothe and heal, and perhaps without these awful traumatic things happening, they may never get to this place of self-love and self-appreciation and finding a meditation practice and, you know, all these beautiful outcomes of something awful that happened to you. So thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of people can connect to that.
Yeah.
So obviously you started to find your feet again, and you started to build yourself back up. And then how did that kind of filter into you then being able to support other people?
Yeah. So alongside all of that, there was about £97,000 worth of debt that needed to be paid off. So that took, so on this journey to, I suppose, finding my true self again, and that's what my books, I suppose, all about, is kind of that journey back home to me. I really needed to do, you know, I needed to calm my nervous system completely down, because I was in that real kind of high state of alert all the time. I was constantly fight or flight, and in fact, freeze most of the time, like paralyzed by fear. If I make the wrong decision, what's going to happen? If I make the right decision, you know, I couldn't get clarity. And I had a really, I had a health scare, actually. I got rushed to hospital, and I didn't have asthma or anything like that, but I had a bad chest infection, and what that brought, and I couldn't clear it. And it's just all the cortisol in my body and all of that stuff. And anyway, I got rushed to hospital, and they said, you're having an adult asthma attack. And I'd never had asthma before. So, and as I was leaving, it was then the consultant, when I came out of the hospital, the consultant gave me a book and said, have you tried meditation? And I said, oh, that's really interesting. A friend of mine had said this 2 weeks ago to me, try meditation. And so I got home and I opened my email, and Deepak Chopra and Oprah Winfrey were doing their free 21-day meditations. And I thought, oh, well, if that's not a sign, nothing else is. So that's when I started to really pay attention and start listening more to what I needed. So I learned, first of all, how to meditate. I learned then, obviously, how to receive Reiki and to receive healing. I'd started yoga as a you know, going to a studio and going to classes, and just to really kind of get that balance, because I was, you know, part of that recovery for me was not about, you know, going wild on the treadmill. It was actually self-love, self-care, the things that you just mentioned before. And I suppose more than anything else, really learning to like myself first of all again, and then learning to eventually love myself again. And that took a decade, to be honest, to get to that point. But it was when I was in those processes, when I was working and with listening to the meditation with Deepak. And then the next minute it said, train to be a meditation teacher. I was like, oh, this is interesting. So I wasn't sure whether to do it or not, but I inquired. And then I spoke to the team at the Chopra Center. And then I realized that Deepak was teaching it. I was like, oh, I just can't miss out on this opportunity. This is amazing. So I went and taught. I got trained by him and his school and his other teachers and so forth. And then that led on to training to become a perfect health teacher, looking into Ayurvedic teacher and practitioner as well, which was really insightful. And then through the Reiki, I then decided to do my level one and two. And then a number of years ago now, about 4 or 5 years ago, I then got my master Reiki. But I didn't know what to do with it. So I think long backstory to your question, but I think once I got into that world and started to see the benefits for me, I thought, well, blimey, you know, this can make a real change. If this can make such a change to me about the way that I see myself and view myself and the relationship that I have with myself and that reduced stress and all of that kind of thing, and really kind of healing myself through all of these different modalities to get back to being well, and letting go of that experience and the trauma of it all. And then I thought, well, how could this really help others? And that's when I started to ask questions. Well, what is my purpose? What is my dharma? Where am I going with this? What do I want to do with all of this? And then I suppose that decade ago, when things had started to settle, so 4 years in, things started to settle for me. And I thought, right, got myself back on my feet with work. I thought, right, how can I then combine everything that I love, because what it's given to me, and how can I then share that with the world, with my clients or with the people that come into my life? And so that's when I started to build more of a spiritual practice in the work that I do. So I first of all transitioned from still doing coach training, and I still do that now, but we include all sorts of things like breath work, meditation and mindfulness techniques. So it's not just your traditional coach training. It's a very spiritual coach training practice, I would say, if that's okay for the listeners. I'm sure it is. And it brings in lots of different things. So dealing and helping you work on yourself equally as much as you can then help others. So I started to bring that into the work. And then I started to bring it in onto my one-on-ones with clients. And the more I learned about it, the more I wanted to, and the more I became a teacher of it, I then wanted to share it. And I suppose that's how it transitioned. And it's just felt a very natural evolution over the years. And I would say now that it just is so integrated in terms of my practice. And then obviously became a yoga teacher, restorative yin and nidra teacher, as well as a general kind of practitioner of yoga and teacher. And I've kind of brought all that into my retreats and everything else. So it feels very holistic way of working now, and certainly a very holistic way of being, I would say now.
Beautiful. And so aligned with your healing journey and who you are. And that just pours out of you, right? Like it becomes an effortless exchange. Exactly. Because you know how valuable it's been on your journey. And so to share that out is just gorgeous. And the fact that, you know, you got to a point where you felt like your tank was refilled enough that you could then go out and support other people is just a huge recognition for you that, like, man, you were, you know, at one point you were at rock bottom and there was probably no, you couldn't possibly think about supporting other people. So to have done all that work yourself and now be able to see other people thrive is just, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to be honest. I would agree with that. It feels a really rewarding journey. And don't get me wrong, it was really hard at times. But I think through the meditation, you learn to calm that inner critic down, and you can calm the ego down and tame all of that a little bit. It's not easy to do. And I think it's still, for most of us, will be a lifelong, you know, journey of trying to quiet the mind and not be influenced by what we think we should be doing or what we, you know, or what other people expect of us. And I think actually really leaning into that and I think giving myself that, I don't think I would have been able to teach it if I would have not have journeyed it. Does that make sense? I feel with all the stuff that I need to do and the stuff that I teach, I feel like in many ways I need to journey it first myself to really know if it resonates and it's significant and meaningful enough and with the hope that it would be, and then you can share it. But I feel that I wouldn't have been able to teach it in maybe the way that I can now if I would not have experienced it myself.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so was that kind of the beginning of Full Circle Global at that point?
Yeah, Sorry, got to carry on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and I was just going to say, could you elaborate on that?
Sorry, I jumped in. I was all excited there for a minute. Sorry.
Of course. But yes. Also in that, could you talk a bit about how you feel like you're separate from this field that you work within, you know, coaching and supporting people? How do you feel like what you're offering is more unique?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, actually. So Full Circle was born, and that was born, you know, after, so 2010, 2011, that was kind of born and was being played around with. But obviously it's evolved as I have and my journey has, I suppose. I suppose when the change came, or when the real penny dropped, was most probably, what was it now? That's 2000. So maybe about 2018, 2019, when I thought actually I felt there was a need for other people to learn how to do these things and to have healing and to be able to teach meditation and all of these things. So I thought, you know, there's a shift in me, I think, because at the time I was not sure, and I wasn't sure whether people were really ready for it. You know, there were some people that were most probably very in tune and attuned to all of that thing. But I think, and I also think most probably COVID has helped in many, it was horrible, but I think in many ways it's helped raise that awareness of mental health and well-being and self-care practices, you know. And I think that's actually been a really big catalyst in many ways for that broader awareness and everything. So I suppose I was seeing interest before COVID and everything. And then obviously COVID hit, and after COVID seen so much more interest. But I suppose for me, what I wanted to do was I didn't want to lose sight of the coaching work that we did and the coach training work that we did, but I wanted to make the training different. I wanted to make it more transformational and more in a way that gave every student a dual experience. So yes, they were learning the tools, the techniques and all of that kind of thing around coaching, but actually focusing on mastery of self, rather than just learning the tools and tricks and tips to be a coach. So really thinking about, well, you are the instrument. So if you're the instrument as the coach, how do you bring the whole of you into that conversation without getting in the way of the other person, but doing it in a way that will allow and unlock, you know, deep healing within another person, you know, kind of overcoming their own limiting beliefs and barriers to success, and really providing them with a really unique space to come and talk to somebody that just isn't that traditional coaching. And so by doing that, that's when we introduced, you know, kind of breathwork techniques. We started to use mindfulness and meditation in coaching. We started to bring things like art therapy into our coaching sessions to allow people to express themselves in a different way. And to use mindful movement and use nature as an opportunity to invite people to experience different things while we were still having the conversation. And that really took off really quickly and surprisingly quicker than expected. And I think since then, more and more people are coming to our training school. And I'm assuming it's a bit like you, people will be coming to you because of what you offer. It's the same thing with me. They come to my training school because they know they're going to have a really unique learning experience. And not only is it going to equip them really well for the role of the coach, but it's giving them a holistic toolkit that will enable them to work more holistically, working with the whole person rather than just one aspect of them.
I love that you said the toolkit. I use that all the time. And yeah, it's great because you talk there about so many different modalities of finding your way that, and not all of them are going to work for everybody. So having that variety, making it inclusive and accessible is key to a thriving business, yeah. But also key to really supporting people's unique needs. So yeah, I love that you said that because I use that all the time in my teaching too. Okay, so with your years of experience as a coach and your dedication to being an educator, how have you seen the landscape of transformational coaching evolve? And what emerging trends do you find particularly exciting at the moment?
Sure. Good question. Right. So yeah, so it has definitely changed over the years. So when I started coaching, the landscape of coaching was pretty much like kind of very goal orientated, quite transactional in early 2000s. and then started to shift into that much more of that deeper transformational, where you are looking at that sustained long-term change, working with the whole person. And then, so I would say, as it's moving now, I think we're moving into, I would say, a different paradigm. I suppose what I'm noticing is that the conversation that we have these days is very different, and it is definitely shifted from career will always be there. People will always talk about their careers. They will always talk about their relationships. They might talk about, you know, but what I'm noticing is this real conversation around purpose. Why am I here? There's a bigger reason for my, you know, how can I serve and what can I give back? And so there's this real citizenship coming through, and this real nice piece around community involvement, or, you know, kind of community growth. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that coming through. And I think a lot of people since COVID have been asking around, well, is this what I want to do for the rest of my life? So what really deeply am I here for? So the conversations around purpose, or dharma, I would call it as dharma, you know, are just so much more advanced than they've ever been. And I think what also is coming into it is people really developing a spiritual practice, which is through yoga, meditation, and all the other modalities that you most probably teach and I touch upon as well. And I think there's more and more of that coming through, and people searching for it and looking for it. And so, you know, conversations around consciousness and coaching and consciousness and leadership and authenticity and, you know, being that kind of personal leadership. And so it's going beyond what I would say would be, yeah, more surfacey to really, I would say, deeper, more meaningful conversations. And the questions that perhaps, you know, we didn't maybe ask ourselves so much years ago are now coming to the forefront and are very present in the conversations.
I mean, that's great. I mean, hopefully our vibration is raising and our consciousness is raising. Exactly.
I think it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think COVID really stirred the pot for so many people to really put the lens back on themselves and look at their life and look at their commitments and look at the way they're sharing their energy and make changes, you know, some forced changes and some changes because they were actually given time to slow down and, you know, they were forced to stop and go inside. And it has really woken people up, I think, to something more. And I agree with you too, the piece about businesses looking at more mindfulness practices that they can infuse into their work and incorporating more yoga and meditation practices into the daily schedule, not as not optional, like this is part of our work day now. And so it that is very exciting that it seems to be moving that way. And, you know, maybe we're a little biased because we're in that field and so we're noticing it more, but I do believe that people have made a conscious shift during COVID, because that was something we experienced collectively, you know, before has that happened?
Exactly. Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's interesting because I get a lot of requests. Well, I have got a lot of requests already for this year, for later on in the year, around, you know, corporate wellness activities such as yoga, meditation. And, you know, could you do a yoga nidra session for us? I'm like, oh my goodness me, you know, I never would have thought that, you know, that's where we're going, but we are. And it's great. It's really exciting, actually. Really exciting.
Yeah. Did you, so when you created your business, did you then write your book pretty quickly after that, or did your book come later on?
The book came later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So the book came later because I think, to be honest, to be fair, I was too busy trying to get I needed to pay my debt off. I was still going through my own journey of self-discovery, so to speak, and things. And I think at that point, I wasn't quite sure. I knew that I wanted to write something. So I journaled a lot. So I think through the whole experience, I journaled a lot. And I had about 100 journals, I think, of notebooks, just notes and notes and notes and notes and notes. And so so I was due to go to India in COVID to do my, I'd done Nidra and I'd done various, but I was going to do my just normal 200-hour yoga teaching. And it was cancelled, obviously, because of COVID. So I had the whole month of March free. And so I thought, well, I don't want to fill that with work, because I was so excited about going to India. I was like, I don't really want to fill that with work. So I thought, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to sit and I'm going to write every day and see what happens. So I get, it's the first time I think I'd ever give myself that luxury of not filling the gap. Because normally I would have gone back into work mode, and I thought, no, I'm going to. So I got up every morning as though I was going to work, you know, get up, I did my exercise, my yoga, whatever, and then I meditated. And then I would just started writing at 9 o'clock and finished at 6. Every day, stopped for lunch and went out, got some fresh air. And by the end of the month, I had my manuscript. And it was just like, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. So it needed a lot of work. It needed definitely a lot of work on it. But that first draft, I was like, well, at least I've got a first draft. And so I sent it out to see if I could get some editing to support me with the editing of it. And then a friend of mine, out of the blue, said, well, actually it was a client who then became a friend from years ago, said, oh, do you need a publisher? And I was like, well, yeah, I'm kind of looking, I don't know where, really where, I didn't know where to start. I was like, could I self-publish? How did it? I know a contact who's looking for female writers at this moment in time. And I was like, right, okay. And then within a 6-month period of writing it, it got picked up and then it was published. By Panama Press, and now it's Rethink Press because they've merged. But yeah, so it was just like, wow. And so then it took another year and a bit to get it all sorted and published. And then it was, yeah. So I would say most probably about 6 years after it came, the book came. Yeah.
Right.
The original kind of moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now does the book supplement your coaching? Like, is that something that you integrate within, you know, some of the modalities that you teach?
Yeah, so I do. So I do kind of retreats, and I do weekenders, and I do other bigger retreats where, you know, we spend a week immersing ourselves in topics. And I feel very much that my purpose in life is to genuinely help people walk. I kind of help them walk back home to their true selves. That's the way that I describe it to people. And so I think that does show up in everything that I do, whether that's all those different modalities. I think that is at the core of everything. So whether that's a pure coaching session, or whether it's more a holistic one, or whether it's a Reiki healing session or yoga, whatever it might be, or an Ayurvedic consultant, you know, kind of a consultation, then it all seems to fit together really nicely. And that seems to be at the heart of everything that, I mean, I don't force it, but that just seems to be what people come for. And it's kind of, the energy has been drawn that way. And so it does show up in everything I do, but also it's a nice reminder for me to keep reminding myself of, well, what does it look and feel like when you're at home, and how do you remain at home as well, which is a really nice kind of concept that I'm kind of playing around with at the moment, to kind of really check in with myself, because we can easily get, you know, derailed, can't we, throughout our time. No matter how much work we've done ourselves, there's always something that will come up. And I think that's one of the things that I've learned, you know, is that there's always another layer away. There's always another layer to peel away. As soon as you get to one point, it's like, oh, there's something else to learn now, you know.
Yeah, it's a lifelong journey, that's for sure. That's so beautiful, though. I love that idea of, yeah, using your writing and your book as a theme for your life now, and a mantra almost that you come back to and repeat and do that check-in and see how you're feeling in the home that is your body and the home that is your space, and all of that work that we can get so distracted from and we can neglect and take for granted. So yeah, wow. And the fact that the book came pretty effortlessly, really. I mean, once you made the commitment to sit down, that unfolding was clearly meant, it was meant to be in the world.
Yeah.
You're also a podcast host, which is exciting, and a keynote speaker. And so you obviously have, you know, reached a huge audience. How do you find that approaching the topics of transformation and self-discovery resonate with different listeners?
A very good question. So I think it resonates with all of the listeners that I've come across. But I think, you know, there's ways I think that I've needed to not kind of adjust, but most probably be conscious of the audience. So for example, you know, I've been asked to do a couple of corporate things, like corporate wellness speaking events and things like that. And you know, it's about, I suppose, tailoring the message to the audience in many ways. So I think there's been a bit of that. I think that just goes, that's just has to happen, I think. But I don't think I've changed it that much where it's not me. So I think, you know, look at, you know, like for my podcast, for example, it's really lovely because I get to interview, you know, people like me, people like you who have, you know, because we've all had our, you know, I've sat down with so many people and we all have our challenges. And then, you know, what I love listening to is their journey and try to draw out their transformation and what's happened for them so that other people can learn. And I learn an awful lot from them as well, but how we can really get comfortable with talking about those transformations, even if they might be ugly or you know, kind of uncomfortable, but to kind of, you know, share the stories that we all face, not all of us, but we do face, lots of us face within our lives. And then I think when I've done other talks, so for example, you know, with I've been quite lucky because a lot of the talks I've done have been very geared around people willing and are already in the same space, you know, so a lot of like holistic wellness people. So I've spoken at quite a few festivals and think, you know, kind of wellness festivals and things like that. And people have like really enjoyed the talk. But I think the key thing is most probably just, you know, by drawing down on my story, I suppose I've talked about real situations and real scenarios that I think has been relatable for people and it seems to have chimed. So I think it's about knowing the audience, but just to make sure that I'm still not diluting my story though because of that audience, but making sure that it's just appropriate for the audience as well.
Yeah. And continuing to know that sharing your vulnerability is key for human connection. And exactly. You know, if you do it as a leader, then you're more likely to encourage other people to follow suit. So
exactly. Yeah.
I was wondering if you had any insights into your retreats and workshops that you organize, perhaps in terms of the experience participants gain from coming and how these events contribute to their personal growth. Yeah. I know because I teach retreats, so I'm always really curious as to how other people schedule them and offer their themes. So I just love any insight you had. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the well-being retreats that I've focused in so far have been really about health. And I have to be honest, most people that come on my retreats are female. It's not like I'm, you know, being sexist or anything like that, but it just so happens that they're the ones, that's my audience, really. You know, I'm 52 this year. So most of my clients are kind of late 30s, 40s, early 50s. So again, just kind of the same demographic, I suppose. And it's interesting because the yoga I teach, you know, I came to yoga later in my life. My body is not as flexible as most probably a young yoga teacher might be, you know, so I teach yoga for I suppose the age group that comes to the retreats, and it's very nurturing and very restorative. So I think I bear that in mind first. So I always think about, well, you know, what would people like to get from this experience? And so I do try. So I, although I have a number of themes and mainly it is around coming back home to yourself. So being able to use your voice, being able to articulate what you want, what you need, unpacking and kind of letting go of those limiting beliefs and that conditioning that is so ingrained in you know, each and every one of us from our childhood into adolescence and into adulthood, and looking about how you can, I think the key thing is to build a better relationship with yourself. So really learning to befriend yourself so that you can like yourself, and then with the intention to love yourself. And so a lot of I try with the themes of the retreat, I make sure that my yoga and meditation practice and the lessons that we're teaching all kind of integrate really nicely. And everybody gets, you know, healing when they're there if they want it. We have, you know, different styles of yoga that I teach, and that works well for the groups. And then we have lessons, and those lessons are really like group coaching, really, where you will, you know, talk about a particular topic, you get people to do the reflection, and then there's some positive outcome that people can take away. So I suppose the ideal outcome would be that people have, first of all, felt safe in the space that's been created for them and feel very nurtured and nourished from being in that space, giving them that time back to themselves, and then giving them the opportunity to release and to let go so that they can then feel more positive about where they're heading, and giving them that clarity of maybe what they might need to let go of, and so that they can create greater space within so that they can, you know, kind of go off and make changes into how they want to live their life. So around their lifestyle. So it will be looking at nutrition. It looks at movement. It looks really at the six pillars of health, I would say. So how you ground yourself, how you, you know, you feed yourself, you know, how you nurture yourself through self-care practices, which includes the meditation and the mindfulness piece, then the mindful movement. So it incorporates those types of activities to create strategies for long-term sustained ways of being.
Love it. And do you go with a team, or are you hosting it all?
No, I just do them on my own. Yeah. Wow. So I quite intimate. The largest I've had is 15 females in one group. But normally when we're going for a week long, it tends to be in between 6 and 8 maximum. And we'll go, you know, we'll go and do meditation on the beach, because I tend to do them in Mallorca, because I like Mallorca and the weather's always nice. but we do them in Scotland as well. We do them down south in like kind of country manor houses. So I always like to choose a nice venue if I can that's got space outside for people equally as much as having some private space inside for them. So that's kind of how it works. The week-long retreats tend to be a little bit more intimate, and where the weekend, you know, it's still intimate with 15, but it's not like we're stacking them in, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people at a time. It's really to provide, I suppose, to give people the group interactivity and to feel, you know, that they're part, they found their tribe, or they found their connections with other women, but also giving them enough space for individual support and one-to-one support as well throughout the week or the weekend. Mm-hmm.
Love that. Do you find yourself as the host after a retreat? Do you have to kind of retract a little to recharge, or yeah, are you the sort of person that can keep going?
I don't think I'd be able to do my job if I didn't. So for me, I end up going very quiet afterwards. I like, and what I always do is I tend to get a couple of days to myself afterwards. My son's in his 20s now. My husband, obviously I'm married again now, but I like to just say, look, I'll come back a couple of days later. Cause it's like, I do need to decompress, and I will go and do. So sometimes I just like go and do something practical. Like when everybody's gone, I might just put the washing on or something like that, you know, do something really practical. And then I'll go out for a walk, or I'll read my book, or I'll journal, or I'll just relax, you know, do something that's relaxing. Most probably put on some really nice music. I might even do myself my own yoga class, you know, for myself, or just do some self practice, anything to most probably just ground myself afterwards, I think is really important. I think when I first started doing them, I didn't take that fully into consideration. I was absolutely exhausted, and I just kept going, and, you know, I kind of went straight back into work the next day, and I was like, oof, no, I need some space and time just to decompress. Are you the same?
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because I was like, okay, she's human. Because I feel like that's, again, one of those other layers of the onion that we peeled back as we got to know ourselves more on this journey as being a host and a leader and a teacher, is that, yes, you have learned all these tools to support yourself, and you're sharing all that again with others. But then, you know, you have exerted so much energy outward that we sometimes forget that we need to replenish ourselves. And it did take me a while to kind of figure that out and establish routines that worked after I'd done so much output. I too do a lot of kind of solitude and hermiting afterwards to just regain and process, really process what's happened, the conversations, the things I learned, the things I need to improve on, all of it. So yeah, I think Yeah, I'm glad that you said that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Don't get me wrong, I don't do all the cooking and things like that. I get somebody to help me out with all the cooking and things like that. I host, but I don't do everything. And I have a cleaner's coming in. I don't do all that either. So I do get help, but yeah. But no, I think you're right. I think the switching off and just the processing of it all. And to use it, I think what you've said there is really beautiful, actually. And I do that myself, is to take reflection on what did I learn from that and what did it teach me, and what can I take with me in the next ones that might be useful? And it's a really nice process to go through, actually.
Yeah. And I think that's part of our spiritual practice and growth as teachers, is that we remain humble and we're still always figuring it out. And there's always going to be mistakes we make. And yeah, like, we need to give ourselves time and space to acknowledge that and figure out what we might do different next time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that completely.
Given that we kind of right now, anyway, I think we've kind of ramped back up, unfortunately, to a place of busy and stress, and, modern life has kind of gone back to normality for the most part, I think, for a lot of people. And I've been feeling it and seeing it in my students. How do you kind of navigate that and gently integrate your meditation and other kind of slower practices into your coaching and teaching to help people without, I don't know if the word's patronizing them or babying them, or, you know, trying to like, or force them into understanding these practices? Because sometimes when we're running on such high energy and busyness and stress, it can be very challenging to be told, like, oh, all you have to do is breathe, and all you have to do is sit down for 10 minutes and do this meditation. Like, it can be very hard for people to hear that, even, let alone drop into those practices. So do you have any tools for helping people get there?
Yeah, so I suppose what I've been introducing now for a while, but I think you're right. I think there's definitely this back to normal is a bit frenetic and actually. So what I notice is I pick up on the energy. So when somebody's walking in the door or they're coming onto a Zoom call, you know, you can see that they've rushed or they've just run in from something. So I just like to invite them just to say, look, you know, how would you like to start the session? You know, would you like to just take a moment just to connect with yourself? Is there anything that you need to leave at the door? You know, that kind of thing. So just a few little questions like that. And then what I say to them is, look, you know, how would you feel about just kind of just closing your eyes, just taking a few deep, I mean, literally three deep breaths, you know, just to try to make it accessible for people, especially if they're not used to the language of that. So look, how would you feel just about taking three deep breaths, just letting everything go so you can be present, we can connect, and actually you get, then that will hopefully give you the opportunity to get the most out of this conversation or this lesson or whatever it is that we're doing. And every time I introduce that, people are like, oh my God, that's amazing. You know, so, and then when they come back for the second session or further on, you know, down the line, you know, and you don't do it, they're like, can we not do that breathing thing? You know, so I think it's that drip feed of trying to make it grounded for them without being too fancy or too spiritual or too woo-woo. Cause I know a lot of corporate people, you know, think, oh, meditation, and they get a bit scared of it. Whereas really what we're doing is we're just closing the eyes down, allowing them to be in, to kind of drop back into themselves. And another way I've been describing it recently is, I said, you know, especially people who drive, you know, well, you've got a car. Yeah. So, you know, just imagine that you're reversing into a car parking space. So can we just take a moment for you to reverse back into yourself? And that's worked really well for people, because when we're out there, we're disconnected, you know, we're not as grounded, and we're kind of, you know, kind of untethering, you know, this just, we're a bit more floaty and less grounded. And I think just even saying it to that people, you know, what would happen if we just took a moment to see you reversed back into the go, and you can see them physically in the chair kind of like, oh, as if they're kind of, you know, moving back as if they were reversing into a car parking space. And I found that to be most probably one of the best things to say at the beginning of a session. Okay. But with the teacher stuff, the coach training or any of the retreat, maybe less the retreats, but if I'm doing any wellness stuff with corporates, sometimes I'm a bit cheeky and I'll say, right, I know some of you might think this is a bit mad, but let's just close our eyes for a few minutes and just, you know, just bear with me and humor me. And I do it that way so that it takes away the mystique or the scariness of it. And yeah, so but that's what I'm trying. And that seems to work quite nicely at the moment anyway for people.
Yeah, I like that, that kind of bite-sized chunks. And in language that's accessible to people, different audiences.
Yeah.
I wanted to finish by asking you a question we ask all our guests, and it's quite a loaded question, but it's a great one. It's a juicy one. So the question is, how do you live your yoga? How are you currently living your yoga?
It's a really good question. So for me, I would say that this is like a lifelong ongoing journey. And when I learned to do yoga and then when I learned to teach yoga in the way that I have been taught through my experience, I realized that discipline leads to liberation. And so through the practice of, and it's not just about doing the asana, you know, going to do a class. It's about incorporating all the other things like the niyamas and looking at how, you know, I'm, you know, not cruel or mean and with my words. So, you know, this I'm not hurting people and I'm following, you know, more of a sacred response approach to my communications. And so I think, you know, there are times when as a human being, I get caught out. I let my belly rumble, especially my husband sometimes. And, you know, I think, oh, why did I do that? I got caught in my own drama there for a moment. But, you know, I think as much as I can. So, you know, so really, I suppose there's everything from nutrition where I'm trying to eat as the best I can from maybe as much plant-based as I possibly can within what's within my remit and what I can control. You know, I practice yoga on and off the mat, I suppose, in as much as I possibly can. And I think I'm just I read a lot. You know, I look at my books here. I've got, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. I've got Time for Grace. I've got the Myth of Normal. I've got the Mastery of Life. So I'm constantly reading and evolving my own awareness and understanding and being, you know, really receptive to how powerful I think Eastern philosophies are for our modern world, and trying to just incorporate that in more or less everything that I can possibly can without trying to brainwash people or to force it down other people's throat. But I suppose I think the answer is taking accountability for what I believe being a yogi is, and then living my life according to that kind of way of being.
Amazing. Yes, that was an amazing answer. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing your insight and your experience. And I was wondering if you could maybe share with our listeners where they could find you, where they could connect with you, where they could get your book, how they could come to your retreat.
Thank you. That's really generous. Yeah. So if you want to, I'm on Instagram. I think most people are. So it's just Gillian.McMichael. You can look at my website, which is fullcircleglobal.com, and it's got all my retreats and my life development options there. And if my book, it's Amazon. So you can buy it from Amazon in Audible or paperback. And then my Full Circle podcast, Finding Your Way Home, is on all the major kind of Spotify, Instagram, and YouTube. So yeah, that's where you can get me.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm going to definitely be listening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us and sharing your journey and your insights. We really appreciate your time, and have a wonderful rest of your day, Gillian.
Thank you.